trying to get away from doing too much as soon as possible. It's definitely a great piece of advice because it is very, very hard. It's just not scalable.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. Me and the team get a whole heap of joy when we see you guys raving about us on social or lists or blogs or wherever you'd like to say nice things about this show. So I like to reward people who say nice things every now and again by giving you a shout out on the show. This time it's a super special one. Adam Clements. Hello, Adam. He did a post on LinkedIn a couple of months ago saying that this podcast was one of the key inspirations and insight sources that led to him launching a brand new e-commerce store called Circolo Sports. Not just a brand new e-commerce business, but a brand new e-commerce business that's on an awesome mission. So Circolo Sports are committed to eliminating sports merchandise and equipment from landfills. Now that's one big objective there. And they're doing that by transforming unwanted materials into high-performance sports kits, boots and accessories. So a lovely bit of circular manufacturing going on there. Loving those goals, Adam. And most importantly, thank you so much for listening. And I hope we help you grow your business over the coming years. In this episode, we are talking growth. We are talking growing from 7 to 8 figures. So from the millions to the double-figure millions, if you like. And I've got someone with some truly crazy experience doing this here in the UK for 3 different businesses he's taken into the double figure digital. 2 he's taken and 1 he really helped revolutionize their digital activity. He's going to be sharing his strategy, I guess more his approach for how to go about growing. We're talking marketing, we're talking efficiency, we're talking teams, we are talking conversion rates, loads of really good ideas on how to approach shifting up a gear in your growth plans, but also loads of nitty-gritty advice too. Thoroughly enjoyed this chat. I know you're going to like it. There is warning for you. There is a bit of dog noise, bit of dog barking at one point. It's fairly faint in the background. You may not hear it, but it is there. So I apologize in advance for that. But Jay was being too interesting for me to stop him and make him re-record. My fault. So please listen to the end of the episode so you work out where the dog is, but also so you don't miss out on my guest's top tips, which are frequently described as the best bit of the show, and my own take on this episode. And now to introduce our special guest. Jay O'Neill is an in-house specialist at growing retailers through digital marketing, CRO and tech stack optimization. He scaled Soak.com from 2 to 80 million, drove digital growth at Holland & Barrett and took Bathroom Mountain from 0 to 40 million in 18 months. Who better to chat to about how to grow your sales from 7 to 8 figures? Hello, Jay.
Hi, Chloe. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome to have you here. You have such crazy experience in probably one of the hardest growth jumps in the e-commerce space. So I'm loving that we're going to be diving into all of that imminently. First, though, how did you end up in e-commerce? Where did your e-commerce journey start?
Oh, it's a long story, to be honest. About 15 years ago, I think it was when I first started out in e-commerce. Prior to that, I was an accountant and I kind of was sat there one day in the office realising finance wasn't for me. And I luckily got myself a role at Soak.com.
Wow, so literally like it just hit you one day, I should not be being an accountant, I should be doing somewhere else, and Soak was the job you got.
I mean, it was probably over a period of a few months, but yeah, it felt like it was just a day. I remember the exact time and place, sat in an office surrounded by some very stereotypical accountants. And they were just moaning about life, about work. And I was like, this is not for me. Did a bit of marketing at college before I started out in finance. And I thought I'd give it a go. And luckily there was a local eBay retailer, to be fair. They were just on eBay at the time. They were known as Bath Empire. I shot over the founder an email and the rest is history, I guess.
Wow. very, very cool. So let's get into the growth thing then. Going from 7 to 8 figures sales level in an e-commerce business, if you had to drill it down to one thing, I know we're going to talk about loads of stuff, but if you had to drill it down to one thing, what's the number one thing you've got to do to set yourself up to do that?
I would say it's one thing around obsession, right? You got to be obsessed about something in particular, around that growth especially. But that obsession needs to be around what you're trying to achieve. So having that strategy, right, when I want to grow to X, and then fully understanding and being obsessed with how you're going to get there. And that generally means focusing on a particular channel when it comes to digital, because you can do lots of channels, okay, you can do them well, but if you really focus and double down on one specific channel and do it extremely well, better than all your competitors, that's where you really get that edge.
So are you meaning a sales channel or a marketing channel? So are we talking eBay versus own site, or are we talking TikTok versus Facebook ads?
A marketing channel. Yeah, a marketing channel. I mean, don't get me wrong, you can focus purely on Amazon, you can focus on eBay, etc. But I mean, today we'll just talk about where my expertise lies is direct to consumer via your website. And I think that there's a lot more control you have there. There's a lot more you can do, as I see with some of the other marketplace channels. There's a few things that are a bit out of your control.
When you're trying to pick which of those marketing channels to double down on and to really focus on, what do you factor in? You know, is it what everybody else is talking about? You know, so like, is it TikTok? Because everyone's talking about TikTok and there's a bit of a blue ocean over there. Or is it Facebook ads because there's Google ads because there's tried and tested strategies? Or is it email because retention's hot right now? You know, what's the angle you go to work out which marketing method to focus on?
That's part of the obsession piece, really. You've got to really kind of obsess around the plan, the strategy of what you want to do and how you want to achieve it. And I think a big part of that is the research. So like you say, do you focus on TikTok because it's the flavor of the month at the moment? And to be honest, if it is, then maybe a huge amount you can do there. But it's dependent on your market, where your audience is, where your customers are, and what you can really push for on that channel. So you've got to do a lot of research. In the past, I've kind of mainly focused on, did a lot of focus on Google. So Google keyword ads were pivotal to soap growing. We were very good at what we did there. We've extremely well in terms of our research and the proposition, the strategy that we had on that channel. But then as we moved through Holland and Barrett, for instance, it was a lot different. There's a big, huge brand presence there. Things changed very different. We had a lot of customers coming onto site naturally. And then when it came to Bathroom Mountain, we focused, again, I did that research at the time. Everyone was talking about Meta. It was huge, and whole businesses being created just purely from the Meta advertising. TikTok wasn't really that big at the time. There was just some slight little murmurs of companies doing well on there. But to be honest, Google Shopping was where it was at for us. It was a big channel. It was a well-formed channel. Everyone knew about it. All our competitors were doing it. But no one was doing it as well as what we believed we could. So, and that's where the obsession piece comes in. We focused on, right, well, we've picked Google Shopping. Now is the channel we're going to focus on, and we're going to obsess about it. We're not going to go and just do it half-hearted. I'm going to try and find every little piece of advantage that I can get through that channel. So when it came to looking at our feed, I would personally go through and I'd review that feed for a fine-tooth comb. Just keep you going through every single point of difference that we could. When it comes to bidding, and how we set up our campaigns, again, really in the weeds constantly and really obsessing. So I think the important part there is just kind of doing your research, focus on those channels, seeing where your customers are. We knew that in the home sector, Google Shopping was one of the biggest channels. It was obviously still seeing a lot of growth for a lot of our competitors. And there was a huge advantage there for us to go and do better than what most of our competitors are doing. But I think that, yeah, I'd say the big one is there is do the research, dive deep, I spent far too much time obsessing about it and really driving into into those channels. But I think that it helps, right? Like you've got to really understand that channel, and you not only want to understand kind of how your competitors are doing on there, but you want to understand that, is there a big advantage you can get from doing something slightly different, and really pushing that? So I think it all comes down to the research, to be honest.
And if through that research you identify, you know, like you were talking there about Google Ads and Google Shopping in particular, and the nitty gritty of that. Now, that is a very different skill set to hugely creative video ads and that kind of thing, which is arguably a lot more blue ocean space and probably on a lot of people's radars to be investing in this year. So if it's not in your skill set to be the person who's in the weeds and obsessed, would you at that point hire someone in who has got the skill set to be in the weeds and obsessed with the video creation and those elements of it whilst you get obsessed with other areas of it? Does that make sense, Jay?
Yeah, no, it does make sense. You should definitely try and utilize experts as much as you can, right? And that was the same for me and throughout my career. Is we'd speak to a lot of agencies, we'd speak to a lot of experts, we'd go to a lot of events and try and speak to people that really know those channels, because it helps you understand. I think the biggest problem you have, and a lot of people will use agencies for this, but you got to remember, an agency is working with a multitude of brands and they're never going to obsess about your particular brand as much as you would. So I'd say definitely bring in an external expert around those channels, but you still need to make sure you know, or you're learning as much about that channel as what they know. Yeah, you may not be the best at doing the creative side of it, but you should fully understand the metrics and what all those metrics mean and how you can influence them and what competitors' numbers are looking like, etc., and try to see how you can gain that advantage. I think that's really important, because that's then going to set you apart of saying, right, well, I know this metric here doesn't look right, or I think we can get better here, and you can really push that agency or that expert that you bring in as well. So I think that comes as a big part of the obsession piece. If you don't know enough about it, it's time to go off and learn as much as possible and really spend a huge amount of time just finding out as much as you can about that channel.
You make me think of something quite interesting there, Jay, which is that you don't have to be a video editor to optimize video advertising. For example, you know, you can be the one who's editing, right, we put the hook, we use this hook versus this hook versus this hook, which one does the results, without having to be the person who knows how to make the hook look good or to put the music behind the hook. You can still be in the bits which drive the results and drives the impact without being the person who's in front of the camera or the one who's you know, editing it all together. So I get where you're coming through with the obsession there. Now, something you said to me, which could be seen as diametrically opposed to getting super obsessed with one of your marketing channels, is you've also got to take a holistic process. You've got to take that holistic view and look at everything at the same time as you're getting hyper-focused. Can you explain to the audience what you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, let's look at it from, if you look at it from e-commerce in total, right? Like, a marketing channel is just one small piece of the puzzle. So yes, you may be great. Let's pick Google Shopping as we did at Bathroom Mountain. Let's pick that as the channel we're going to focus on. We did really well. We got some good level of traffic, got some good performance. But as soon as you land on the site, that performance needs to match the obsession you've had with that channel as well. So the landing page just needs to be spot on. The product page, all the information the customer needs is there. You're constantly testing different things as well. Obviously, I come from a background of conversion rate optimization as well. So it's making sure you're kind of, again, that same obsession you were taking on the channel, you take that onto the site as well. So, and that goes from not just kind of that landing page, but the merchandising you have on the site, the focus on the speed and the load time of the site, which is extremely important. And obviously, everyone's heard lots about that, but it's having that obsession around those performance factors, then moving on into the checkout, where it's usually the lowest hanging fruit of any site I've ever done any consulting on, is because straight look at the checkout, there's always a little tweak to be made there, but it's following that through the whole customer journey, right up to the point of them purchasing. And in fact, and then even further as well, if you want those repeat purchases and to keep a decent reputation as you grow as well, of making sure that post-purchase journey is obsessed about just as much.
We're talking about going from 7 to 8 figures, which suggests there's more than one person in the team. So do you kind of like divvy up micro obsessions amongst the team and then all have one big goal? Or would you get everybody obsessed in the exact same piece? How do you kind of extrapolate that obsession across the team? Because you can't do it purely on your own in this scenario.
Honestly, my biggest mistake at Baffin Mountain was thinking I could do it on my own. I live in Leicestershire. I would drive up to Stoke-on-Trent. It took me about 1.5 hours to get there. So I'd get there nice and early in the morning. I'd do the kind of operational pieces because I was running the business as well. So working with the guys in the warehouse, making sure the orders are out, making sure the customer services team are focused on the tickets that are coming in. And then I'd work with the development team to various different tasks around the site, et cetera, and our digital marketing. We had a couple of people in digital marketing at that point, but I would still be heavily focused on all areas, doing far too much. I'd sit up until 1, 2 in the morning sometimes, just doing negative keyword work. Like no one was good. No one put in the amount of hours I did. And again, I was probably too obsessed, to be honest, at times. And I definitely should have divvied out more stuff. But you kind of set that scene that this is what I'm going to do. I'm leading this business or this area of the business, and I'm this obsessed. I want that to kind of be infectious to the rest of the team. So as we brought people on, they kind of saw that. And then, yeah, you do start divvying up because as you scale, that's probably the hardest part. And obviously I've learned a lot from that. And I hope a few people learn a bit from our conversation today is trying to get away from doing too much as soon as possible is definitely a great piece of advice because it is very, very hard. It's just not scalable. But as you were saying there, with kind of divvying it up, yes, definitely. I always tried to hire people that maybe they didn't have all the experience, but I knew you could teach someone about a channel, but you can never teach them to be as obsessed as you were. Then I think you wouldn't really expect them to if it's not their business, but you can that kind of culture, that ethic that we built was we hired the people and then taught them a bit more around about how those channels worked, how the site worked, etc. And then that kind of really, really helped us to build a really strong team almost as obsessed as I was.
And if we're talking team, that takes us into what I think is probably the biggest difference in growth in 2025 to growth in, let's say, 2023, which it was growth at all costs. Growth without paying attention to profitability, but we're just going to go for growth. We're just going to go for growth. Hugely increasing use of buzzword as we got towards the end of 2024 was efficiency, team efficiency, automation, dare we say it, AI. How do you bring that into a growth plan for 2025? How do you balance that obsession with growth with a need to try and do it efficiently?
I mean, to start off with, it's always been a focus of mine. I mean, maybe it comes from my finance background, but I've always been had that focus around efficiency and profitability. And when we started Baffin Mountain, we grew very quickly, right? Like 40 million in 18 months. But we also turned a profit in those 18 months as well. I always focused on driving that efficiency from day one. We wanted to make sure we were profitable. And yeah, not many businesses were, especially during that period of COVID as well. It was growth at all costs for a lot of our competitors. But having that efficiency piece and really driving that, we again, obsession around the channels meant that our cost of sale model was 13% when our competitors were at 20%. So I've always had that kind of as part of any growth strategy of making sure it's efficient and we're growing efficiently as well. And I think more and more retailers are talking about it. It's definitely going to be a big thing for next year. And I think that it's taking that holistic view of where things are wasted, where you can make things easier. And you get there's a lot of talk about using AI and assisted by using AI. And I think that people have kind of got it wrong, that they're trying to work out how they can shoehorn AI in, but actually what they should be doing is looking at how they can utilize AI for the mundane. Like, I don't see AI taking everyone's jobs. Not in the next 3-4 years at least anyway, because it's just not up to it. A very good large language model isn't going to replace a merchandiser that's obsessed about their category, for instance, because they're going to know, the merchandiser is going to know more. They're going to be in the weeds. They're going to be looking at the data and they can interpret it different ways and they can have more creative ideas. But if you can incorporate AI into that merchandiser's workflow, and those mundane tasks that merchandiser does on a Monday morning, for instance, are just automated, that's where you get the benefit from AI and the efficiency, because that means that merchandiser now doesn't have to worry about some trading report or looking at the numbers across the trading numbers for the last 2 weeks. They actually go and focus on the value add and where they can really drive AOV or they can drive conversion rate. And I think that's where most retailers probably need to take a step back and think about how they utilise not just AI, but also just automation workflows and changing out their tech stack as well. There's always been a lot of with retailers that if there's a problem, throw people at it. So you end up having an e-commerce team of 15 people when really you only probably need 8 or 9 if you get the stack right. And it's we'll get to the point next year where people can start taking more of a focus on that. It feels like the replatform days have kind of died down a bit, and now we're starting to look at the rest of the stack and how we can optimize that further.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of talk about tech stack rationalization or tech stack shrinking as we're getting towards the end of 2024, and I am fascinated to see how that comes together next year. But your point around the merchandiser there is, and how AI can help people spend less time on the dull stuff and more time on the value add, is I think, you know, we see all these kind of sexy, exciting case studies of how AI can write copy and create video and all the rest of it. But where I think it's really going to deliver the value for the e-commerce industry is where it's dealing with large data sets, whether it's product data or whether it's results or whether it's customer data. It's like that to me seems where it's going to drive the biggest ROI. Is that where you think AI is coming for us?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, you think about it. I mean, let's take what I was doing in the early days of Bathroom Mountain, when I was sitting up till 2-3 in the morning, working on negative keywords, going through thousands and thousands of keywords. If I can train a model on how I'm thinking around these keywords and that does that for me, that then I can quickly review them. I won't let it do it all, but I could quickly review them. That would save me hours upon end. It also, the same with a merchandiser around how they can pull together some larger data sets around their products and enrich those products and bring in, I think the biggest thing that a merchandiser will probably like to do more is to do a lot more research around what's driving traffic, what's driving searches, etc., and then enrich products around those and create more demand level attributes. But again, you don't have time. Like most e-commerce teams are stacked out and they're working on loads of different things. So those large data sets, automating a lot of that process and bringing that in, where then a merchandiser or anyone within e-commerce can literally go through a very brief report, quickly check stuff off, and just to make that workflow much quicker and easier, you're then going to get them focused on those value add, but also you're going to get a much happier e-com team. I think that's the important one. Happy teams generate a lot more growth than the ones that are just being kind of forced to work through a terrible tech stack or long, elongated workflows, for sure.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Jay, are you ready for the top tips?
Let's go for it.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
I would recommend Design Sprints by Jake Knapp. I'm a massive, massive fan of iterating quickly and the design sprint process that he developed at Google Ventures. And I think it would be incredible if a lot more retailers utilised that level of innovation.
Oh, nice. Not one I've heard of. So I will have to go and have a look at that myself. Thank you for that, Jay. Traffic top tip next then. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I think word of mouth. I think it's not utilised as much. Those referrals. I mean, how many times do we all recommend someone that we've had a decent experience with? There's just not enough done around it, and there's not enough to incentivise that word of mouth either in retail.
Very true. But how do you get obsessed with word of mouth? I mean, like the numbers aren't there, are they?
It's a very difficult one, I think. There's a lot to be said around speaking to your customers. I would spend every job I've ever had, sit there on the phones, in our showrooms, and obsessing about the customer and their journey and talking to them. And you start to find little snippets out of how their journey started. And they may have found you via Google Shopping, but then if someone's kind of said, oh yeah, I used them before, and next thing you know, you got a referral in there, and you weren't really aware of it. So there is a lot more to it than probably what we realise, but I think just kind of focusing on that customer, sitting on the, if you've got a customer service team, sitting on the calls every now and again, going out with the delivery team and deliver some of the goods, which I've done quite a few times, you learn so much more about your customers, and actually you realise there is a lot more to the word of mouth side of things than you probably realised.
Nice, love it. Okay, tool top tip. Maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Airtable, I think, is a big one. Airtable, or maybe Retool, depending on on what you're trying to achieve. But I wish I knew about both those before I started Bathroom Mountain, because it would have made me so much more efficient, without a doubt.
We're just getting into Airtable here, and it's mad, absolutely mad what you can do with that platform.
Yeah, incredible. I wish I knew more about it. I was always big on Excel, and that's probably supported me in my career and the trajectory I've been on. But yeah, if I had Airtable and knew what I knew about Airtable now, then I'm sure I would have advanced much, much quicker.
And what was the second one you mentioned?
Retool. So similar in terms of creating kind of like internal tools. It's more of a low-code application. You can kind of create your own kind of apps within there. I've done a lot of it. We've used it a lot with Merchstack and creating some really cool AI tools for our customers.
Nice. Cool. Not heard of that one. Another one for me to go and check out. This is good. Carbon top tip. Finally, what's your favourite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
Focusing on returns. For the bathroom sector, returns is actually quite high. And the problem with that is they're big, bulky items. But every sector has a ridiculous returns rate, I think, at the moment. A lot of that is down to poor information on the website. So you can do a lot to reduce those returns. You can make the processes better as well. We used to get quite a lot of returns in a big section of the warehouse. They come on a pallet network, so they get really dirty and you can't really sell them again, or they get damaged. So yeah, reduce those returns. It's going to have an impact on reducing your carbon footprint, but also it can have a massive effect on the business because it's going to improve your costs no end.
Awesome. Always good to have a chat about returns. Jay, before we say goodbye, please let the listeners know where they can get in touch with you, because I believe you're currently looking for your next big growth obsession, aren't you?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I'm quite active on LinkedIn. So yeah, reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm looking for that next role now. I'm looking for that next role of moving back to a brand. So I've been in tech for a little while now, since leaving Bathroom Mountain. So I'm looking for that next one, jumping back to the brand side and really grow a retailer again and kind of feed that obsession that I've been missing a little bit since moving away. But also kind of taking what I've learned around the tech side of things, the efficiency and optimization, and bringing that back to a brand as well.
Brilliant. So anyone who's interested in having a chat with Jay about maybe him coming and working for you and helping you grow your business from 7 to 8 and beyond, get in contact with him on LinkedIn. Jay, thank you so much for being on the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. It has been awesome learning your advice on growth. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Chloe. Thanks for having me on.
How much does Jay clearly love being obsessed with ways of growing e-commerce businesses. Loved his insights there. For me, it drilled down into three key things. First off, have your obsession, your marketing channel obsession, and do that due diligence, that research to work out which it should be, and then leave no stone unturned. Go deep. He said that by doing that, he'd got a 13% cost of acquisition compared to his competitors' 20%. That 77% gap, 7 percentage points gap even, is a game changer, all by being focused on what you're trying to deliver. Then take a holistic approach to the whole of the customer journey. Make sure you're making that website fast. Make sure the journey's good for the customer. Make sure it's working how it should. Create the right landing pages. So you kind of go from this huge focus on one marketing channel to that whole end-to-end e-commerce piece as well. And then we get into the team stuff, which I think is both that piece about having happy teams is super important, about bringing the team along with your obsession, and about building efficiency into the team and finding ways to enable them to do their best work rather than just the grunt work. Really, really loved that chat with Jay there. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including his top tips and links to what we mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll go straight to the right episode page. When you get to the website, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. And if you like this episode, why not have a listen to our very recent episode? It's a couple before this one, which is our annual top tips for being successful in 2025 in this instance. Always, always, always has been ever since we first launched back in our first January was 2016. Ever since 2016, this has always been our most popular episode of the year. So you're going to love it. And we've got a group of e-commerce experts sharing their top tip for success in 2025, including Jay. So scroll back up your feed, have a look at that, or listen even to that for more advice. And if you want more stories of big brands growing, then head to ecmp.info/big on the website, where you will find all our big store episodes. Thank you so much for tuning into this and every episode of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. We bring you a new interview every week because we want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including becoming more sustainable. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I hope you have a brilliant week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.